Backseat Producers, Episode 166, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1.
We should do a show that only reviews Christmas TV shows.
Yes.
Because this week has already been Christmas week.
I can't watch any of them.
Why?
Not with the kids around.
Oh, yeah, for the obvious reason.
Jesus, and Glee fucking starts with that.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was a good episode, though.
It was good.
That was one of the best they've done this season.
That was really good. I love how they used that story with Brittany. That was very clever. And how they were all basically defending her.
Yes.
That was really cool.
Goddamn Beast. Beast is my favorite.
Yes. They just keep revealing a little more and a little more and a little more about her.
It's always... Yeah.
And it just makes her a better and better character every time.
You need to watch more TV, Daryl.
I know. Since I don't watch much TV...
Need your poncho.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Is this
about?
For priming the pump? Working
this
the wand?
Karen Lagan is for.
Cracking the core?
Let's see. I don't even know
Releasing the Kraken? That's why we should review that movie. Just as in Liam Neeson say, release the Kraken.
We could do a comparison of both of them.
No, I don't want to watch
the
old
comparison.
One.
The old one's good.
Yes.
The old one's campy.
The old one's
and
old.
Understands
that's the problem.
That it's campy.
Well, it realized the limitation of its special effects, but it made up for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I am not going to lie to you. First off, what is that noise? Did you get a bird?
It's a fucking dryer.
Oh,
the pulley.
It's supposed to have been stopped.
Second off,
I'm gonna say something here. Second,
the new WoW expansion is hot beyond reckoning.
The what expansion?
Oh.
WoW.
Yeah. Oh wow. Oh, Clannicus.
So the Worgen starting zone. So you know the story of the Worgen, right?
No.
Okay.
I've run into some Worgen. In fact, I was a Worgen for a few minutes. I like got hit by something, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm a Worgen all of a sudden.
Now I'm a wolf.
So the hell just happened?
Like, the kingdom of Gilneas became increasingly isolationist after all the wars, and so when you start playing as a Worgen, you're a human. And, like, you go in, and the guy is sitting in the courtyard, and he's like, it's too quiet. Go here. And so you go there, and when you come back, the courtyard is just a battle. And, like, Worgen are jumping off buildings, and they're attacking and lighting stuff on fire, and the guy's like, we're under attack! It's like, it's a running fight through the city to get to the stronghold to defend the king, and then, like, along the way you get bitten, and then you get the status effect. It's like, oh, it's just a little bite. It'll probably go away with no ill effect. Like, you're lighting Worgen on fire, they're leaping building to building. It's pretty hot. It is pretty hot.
So what is the Cataclysm? Is it a reset of the whole universe?
It's big.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Are we recording already?
We haven't started.
This broadcast.
Screw it. This is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
This is David.
We are the Backseat Producers. We're just going to leave all that other crap in there.
That's fine. Whatever. Welcome to How I Edit the Podcast.
I know. I've heard that. There's like 5 minutes before you actually get the intros.
It's getting pretty bad, yeah. So... The original World of Warcraft game was the 0 to 60 game. When the first expansion came out, Burning Crusade, you left the world and went to another dimension. So the 0 to 60 game became irrelevant, and nothing ever changed there. Then they did their second expansion, Wrath of the Lich King, and you came back to the world, but you went to different places. So the 0-60 game didn't change at all. Well, with this new expansion, they did two things. They put in new zones, new higher level zones, but they also made a world event that changed the 0-60 game. All the changes are permanent. Like, there's one zone that's a huge lake, that's a dam. Well, the cinematic is when the dragon bursts from the ground, it goes through and it just wrecks the world. So it busts the dam, so the lake is empty when you get there. So the lake is just completely empty. When you go to the zone beneath that, like this kind of waterfall cascaded down, the whole zone is flooded. There's a city there that's just underwater. It's pretty hot. The whole game has been changed that way.
All right, so they pretty much reset the whole universe.
Yeah,
that and they Blizzard games have always been known for having like inside pop culture jokes throughout, and they've really amped that up big time with the new quest they've added. Like in one of the zones, there's a detective that goes around, and every time he talks, he says something, stops, puts on a pair of sunglasses before he finishes what he says.
It's pretty awesome.
And his name's even like Horatio something.
There's a gnome underwater in one of the zones, and like he's the situation.
That's awesome.
Like ETL, something tinkering and something else. I'm like, good God.
There was one area that was just, it was just atrocious. It was just nothing but grinding and killing high level monsters when you're at a fairly medium to low level. It was kind of boring, but you had to get through it to advance the game. They've completely revamped all of it. Now it's basically a retelling of Rambo.
Jeez.
First Blood. It's awesome. Like, the guy's name is like John J. Keegan instead of John J. Rambo, and Trotman, the Colonel. There's even a Colonel Trotman that was his CO, yeah. And they have to get Bravo Company back together.
It's
very tongue in cheek and cheesy, but it's a lot of fun.
So essentially, they
occasionally do this to keep the game.
Yeah, yeah, fresh. They advance the storyline. So well, the world, the story is advancing.
Plus, I've played a couple of different times in the past, and got to a point where it's like I played for a month and got bored. Couldn't even make it to level 20. I never got to the point of getting a mount to move around faster. I mean, there was just a number of things that was just like really tedious. Now I'm like level, and I've only been playing for about 10 days. I'm at level 29 and a half.
Okay.
I mean,
so they
just
sped it up a little bit up. So
they,
it doesn't,
the low level stuff they've sped up.
They learned a lot when they did their two expansion releases, and they took everything they learned about making the game fun from those expansions and put it back into the first world, which is the longest part of it. And then they sped up the questing.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is now possible, if you get all of the guild perks, all of the heirloom gear, and the Scroll of Resurrection, you can get 200% XP above normal XP.
So they're trying to just take some of the drudge out of for new users.
Yeah.
So that they can be engaged, get up to speed sooner, and stay engaged longer.
That was my problem playing in the past. You know, these guys were like, hey, come play with us. Okay, you're level 60, I'm level 5. Can't really play with you.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, there was such a disparity that there was no way I could, you know, I'd have to spend 2 or 3 months just grinding to get to the point to be able to play with them. And by then I was bored with it.
Yeah, that's why expansions are good times to jump in, because everybody is jumping in and doing stuff at the same time. It was like, now we've got a podcaster's guild going on. It's pretty hot.
I'm having fun with it right now. I don't know how long I'll stick with it, but yeah, for now. I had a month, so we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. Hey, did you get archaeology yet? It's a new profession. Go get it.
No, I have not. Right now I'm doing herbalism and alchemy, but
a secondary version. You don't have to drop your remains. It's like first aid or cooking.
You can get those also.
Yep.
Oh,
there's primary professions.
See, I have no clue.
There's primary professions and secondary professions. Go get first aid.
Okay.
Just bandaging is, it's a like 5 second. healing cast that you can cast in combat.
Oh, okay.
So you can distract with your pet and then heal yourself.
I distract with my pet a lot anyway.
Yeah.
So do you touch your monkey a lot?
Yeah. You gotta feed it. It has a happiness score. Mm. I need to make it very happy.
Once you touch the monkey, you can never go back.
That's right. All right. Enough WoW talk. Let's get to the real reason we're here.
All right.
Next week, we're talking about Jeffrey. Apparently, this is a funny movie. That's what I've been hearing.
Is this how you try and entice me to show up?
I entice you to show up by doing Harry Potter again. My fear is...
Harry Potter and Watchmen and Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, my fear is that, you know, your first episode was Harry Potter.
That's
We've
true.
Done two subsequent Harry Potter episodes for the movies that have been released after that. After next summer, when the third one comes out, we talk about it.
I'm done.
You're done. You're out. We'll have to find a new host.
Done.
Damn it. I hate breaking in hosts.
New hosts are hard to find.
What do you mean no video? There's video. Oh, look, my old man
is
in
there. No, there's not.
Oh.
There it is. Whoops.
Like my old man is in the audience.
Better.
Tonight. What's going on, Dad? All right, let's jump into this.
Harry Potter!
Harry Potter 7, Part 1.
All right. This was a book before it was a movie.
No, Tony.
So, wait. So, you know what? We're going to spoil the whole thing for this movie.
It's been 3 years, so...
Yeah,
everybody should know.
If you don't know, spoilers from people who have read books.
Yeah.
That was a great Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. So, just a little bit of meta outside of this. The whole Rip Dobby... trended for a couple of days on Twitter, and then I guess Twitter caught wind and caught hell, because it's like, that's a spoiler to the movie, you can't put that out there. People were complaining about it, so then they changed what was trending, so then it was just Dobby was trending.
That's lame.
It's like, how would you not realize at that point that that's what it was trending about?
Well, I, for one, was pretty happy when Dobby died. Not gonna lie. But let's start with the beginning of the movie. Alright, high-level reviews.
High-level reviews. I thought it was one of the better Harry Potter movies that I've seen recently. It was far better than the last one.
Low bar.
Yeah. There was. You almost wonder if they set a very low barrier... with number 6.
It was the same director, too.
Anything by comparison would be better.
It was the same director, too.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand how that could possibly even happen. That the disparity between the quality of 6 and 7. I understand that it's a bit of a different ballgame because they're splitting the movie into 2, so they've got 6 hours, essentially, to work
right with.
That's a lot of time to fill.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, they have time to do things right. But, man... Go ahead, Daryl. I don't want to hijack this yet, but no, it's coming.
I liked it a lot. It was nice to get away from Hogwarts for a while and have a more character-centric story without all the backdrop of the school in there.
Mm-hmm.
This became a more like a dark road picture.
Mm,
yeah.
More
yeah.
than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually liked the pacing of the movie. There, I'd seen some complaints about, oh, it's boring. It's the most boring one.
Oh, come on.
I thought the pacing was really good. I heard a lot of people complaining about how boring it was and how there wasn't any action. I thought the action was it was pretty well spaced out.
Yep.
Yeah, they had some talky scenes, but
character building.
Yeah, it was necessary.
Yeah, I don't have many complaints of this movie at all.
Well, a lot of people complain about the action being absent. Most of the action was stacked in the beginning of the film. The rest of it is all the aftermath.
It was
of
spread.
That.
Well, and there was some other action spread out. There wasn't any huge, big slam bang action sequence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
because the opening flight kind of glazes over the action because you're not part of it.
Yeah, there was...
It's just confusing, which is what they were going for. I'm fine with that.
I'm gonna make this comparison.
Oh, it's going to piss me off. Go ahead.
Probably. Superman Returns had about as much action.
Tony.
It had about as much action.
Yeah, I know. The only problem
It was spread out. There was a lot of character stuff in between.
Yeah, okay.
But
here's the problem,
though. The difference is there was no Superman Returns Part 2 where shit happens.
Yeah. That's the problem.
That you know is coming.
I don't watch a Superman movie for the characterization because it's Supes. Yeah. I want to see him bend stuff and, like, shoot laser beams out of his eyes and fly around in tights. That's what I want to see. Otherwise, we're not going to see a Superman movie.
Otherwise, you can just watch Smallville.
Yeah, exactly. Just watch Smallville when he doesn't fly. Although, that's a Mac, isn't it? She does make me happy in the pants.
One thing was noticed in this film is how much the characters have aged a little bit.
Yeah,
they're a lot more. They're no longer acting like children anymore. They're starting to act like
adults. That is why I think the opening scene was the most powerful scene in the movie.
Yeah,
they added that was not in the book. Where it's implied in the books, and she says that she does it, but when they actually go through and she erases her parents' memories, and not only of where she's going, but just removes herself from their lives completely. Like every time her image disappeared from those pictures, I was like, yes, this is hot, man. What are you doing over there?
Something is really off with the sound.
Well, now it looks fine. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Well, yours looks fine.
Well, how about mine? I mean,
nope,
I'm not coming through, except for picking up in your mic.
Hey, is everything plugged in? Because usually when
everything's plugged in. The channels are separated. All right, you know what I'm going to do?
Now it's back, and I'm singing to the mic.
All right,
anyway. That opening scene was the most powerful, when she goes through and she obliterates herself from her parents' memories.
That was brutal.
I was like, this is going to be a rough movie, and you know what? I want it to be a rough goddamn movie.
You know what? It was also really... mature storytelling the way they did it, because she said obliviate, and they showed her fading from the pictures. Mm-hmm. But then someone does obliviate later, and they explain this is removing memories, like permanently removing memories. They make mention.
Do they do it again?
Yeah.
Oh, again. They do it on the Death Eater in the shop.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was like that was a nice callback to say, look. This is a big deal when we do this.
Well, I mean, it was kind of the plot from 2, so if you were big into 2, like, you knew what was happening.
I'm going to go ahead and say it here. This was... I had one complaint about it, and it's not really a valid complaint. I won't say.
Good.
Because you... To understand really what was going on, you either had to be... You had to have watched the movies... very recently, or have been
this guy
very, very well read in the books, because there was a lot going on that was like, I'm not really sure what's happening. And I've read all the books, I've seen all the movies. Now, granted, I'm not to your level.
No, who is? Come on.
But yeah, I mean, it was
good.
They couldn't have made it
well
too much clearer. It doesn't exist on its own.
I mean, frankly...
It's the seventh movie in a series.
There we go.
You can't really expect that it's going to exist on its own, and you can't expect to come into this cold.
Right. It's like watching Return of the King without seeing Fellowship or Two Towers.
Right.
That's not a complaint to the movie.
No. The problem is there's going to be some people going to see this movie and the next one because it's the last one in the series, and I want to know what's going on. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I've had like my parents try to. Oh well, it's the Lost finale. Maybe we should watch it because it's going to be such an event.
What?
Don't.
Yeah, don't.
Don't do it. Don't waste your time.
Yep.
Because
if you want to go back and watch it later, it's
huge disappointment. It's going to be a huge disappointment for all you're doing is wasting your time.
Yep.
And you're going to have a negative experience. And I don't want you raining on my parade.
So one thing about this movie that really got me was, I don't know if this was intentional or not. I don't know if it was intended for me to feel false hope and then it gets squashed. Like, so when they are preparing to leave, when they're preparing to fly Harry away, right, in the first opening scene, okay, the first thing he does is he lets Hedwig go.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, at this point, I was so disappointed. I was like, I cannot believe that they're gonna cheat me out of this. And this is my thing. I'm like, there's 2 hours left of this movie. What else are they going to cheat me out of?
Right.
And so I was so pissed, man, because I'm fuming, and I'm like, you know what? They're probably not even going to come Mad-Eye, and Mad-Eye is going to be floating around for the whole seventh book. This is going to be lame, and blah, 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 blah. And then they're flying away, and then who comes back? Hedwig. And I'm like, what? Did you just make Hedwig's death worse? I think you did! And I was like, booyah! Like, there was this... I felt triumphant afterwards.
You know what? It also made them figuring out which one was Harry make more sense.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so many... They really took that whole sequence and said, how can we make this
more
work for film?
Yeah.
That's the one thing that this movie did so much better than any of the previous Harry Potter movies.
I totally agree.
They took the whole tome and said, how can we really make this a movie?
Yeah.
Let's not translate the book to the film. Let's make this a movie.
Yeah, these events movie, have to happen. Not book.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's what makes it so enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is they had to work with was they had the previous films to look back on and see how they've been pacing them out.
Right.
And that's one of the problems when this series has been between the book and the movie. People complain, well, they leave too much out of the movie and they change the direction that the books have been going. Well, that inevitably happens in any translation from one media to the other. You can't do a one-on-one like that because the pacing, the storyline,
yep. Is
different. And also each director has a different interpretation, and plus the actors either get more comfortable in the roles or they change. That's the whole idea.
And there were so many little things that they added to this that just kind of spiced it up. The Warner Brothers logo rusting and falling apart in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's okay. Boom, right there, setting the tone. When they leave to fly, okay, they don't fly into the fight. They're flying and there's a thundercloud and it looks like lightning. So they fly right into the storm. And then as soon as they
nice
puff through the cloud...
Nice metaphor right there.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Boom! And you're like, whoa, crap! That's not actually a storm.
Yeah, they...
Yeah,
there was a lot they did very right about the beginning.
They stepped up the quality of the movie for this one.
Yep.
And you know what? I am fine with that. Looking back over Half-Blood Prince, I will forgive them for Half-Blood Prince if... They're like, you know what? Let's just save $250 million off our production budget and then apply it to this movie. I'm fine with that. If they told me that happened, fine. Well, I am in.
Well, one thing also in this movie, the actors, all the cast knew this is the last one. So this is the one they're going to be remembered for. So they brought a better game. The others, they may have been phoning in their performances, or they may have gotten tired of it.
They're also kids. I mean,
they're not kids anymore.
No,
but they've been making this movie for 10 years.
We turned on
Sorcerer's Stone.
ABC Family had a Harry Potter marathon this past weekend, and Sorcerer's Stone. It wasn't Sorcerer's Stone. It was the second one,
Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, Chamber of Secrets was on, and it was the sequence. Where the Harry and Ron are walking out and they find the spiders,
mm-hmm.
and the spider is there talking to them.
Yeah, Aragog.
And Ron is just terrified and just and
it's
Harry's
terrible,
Harry yeah Harry's cool about it. The acting is atrocious.
Yeah,
it's really bad. Well, that's what I'm saying. They're children, but they did well enough and have trained these kids well enough that their acting has improved immensely along the way.
Well, they've also matured, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's less ridiculous. It feels almost like...
Well, and the movie is like... The movie is less ridiculous, too. I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous scene that they're standing there with all these spiders crawling all around them.
Yeah.
And the one's going, you know, freaking out. And the other one's just having a conversation with a 15-foot-tall spider.
Yeah, which is,
it's kind of a ridiculous scene.
It's an awesome parallel, though, the coming-of-age of... You got three coming-of-age stories wrapped into one in this kind of book-movie journey.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the actors themselves, you've got the kids, and you've got the writing. Because the writing gets so much better as the series goes on. And I don't know if it's because the plot gets more mature and deep, or...
The writing gets better.
Well, I'm just talking strictly from a movie sense here.
The books
get a little better.
In the books?
Well, the books too.
The writing definitely gets better as they go along.
So, it's an interesting parallel to watch kind of come to fruition in this movie. Because you're right, this has been a phenomenon for 10 years.
Yeah.
That is a hell of a long time to be producing material from the same universe that is sequential.
With the same cast.
That's except for that one guy who got killed.
Dead.
And the other guy who Richard Harris died, and then Crab who got, like, arrested for using pot or something stupid.
Oh,
and then they didn't include him.
Big deal.
Yeah, which is fine. I don't care.
Wow, a crony of a secondary character doesn't appear. Darn. Let me ask you this, because I don't remember from the book. I read the book when it first came out.
I will correct you, Tony Mast. Right.
Just because I don't remember. Was there a scene similar to... Because they had a scene on the train to Hogwarts. Was that in the book at all?
I don't think...
Where they come onto the train...
No, and I'll tell you why.
And Neville says, "Get out of here, you losers." Or, "He's not here, you losers." Or something like that. Where it was a nice bit of foreshadowing for Neville.
For what happens to Neville?
Yeah.
They don't, because the books never leave Harry-centric.
That's what I thought.
The point of view is always from Harry's point of view, because they have to maintain that for it to work as Harry being your avatar to discover the world.
Right.
So they never break that in the books.
Right, you're not going to have a third person narrative viewpoint on that.
But the movies do.
The movies have to break
to necessary effect.
Yeah.
To explain what's going on, like with the Death Eaters.
And the Death Eaters in 6, right. And like the Prime Minister in this one. But yeah, oh man, when Neville stood up and put that Death Eater down, I was like, God, I wish there were so many kids in this theater, otherwise I'd do something terrible.
Yeah. But
man, it's God.
That was a nice bit of foreshadowing. And I think they're gonna do it justice based on that.
Oh man, if they maintain the level of justice they've done to the work as this movie did in the next one, there's gonna be some bitchin' scenes. Mrs. Weasley, Neville Longbottom, I think Ron and Harry are going to... not Ron and Harry. I think Ron and Hermione are going to do it on screen. It's going to be awesome.
Well, speaking of doing it on screen, what did you think of that scene?
That was the weirdest scene that I didn't know I wanted in the movie until I saw it.
Because I read an article about the scene before the movie. Like the writer was saying, there's an extra scene in the movie... The screenwriter said there's an extra scene in the movie that he's like, I had an epiphany one day that this scene needs to be in the movie.
And
he wrote it out, and it was that whole sequence where basically the temptation of Ron.
Well,
is
the Horcrux preys on his fears.
I didn't think that was the scene that he had the epiphany for.
I think that's what he added.
Because there were a couple
scenes. Was it that or was it the dancing?
It was the dance.
Was that it?
Yeah. Because it was a very World War II type reminiscent thing where, like, they've got the old timey radio and everything's going to shit and they're trying to find comfort in themselves.
And see, I thought that was cool. I thought it was really cool.
So stupid. But then I was satisfied by this.
Friends trying to make each other feel comfortable in a really screwed up situation.
Yeah.
Well, that also throws back again to a British audience there. British audience is going to pick up on that instantly because life during wartime, here they don't know whether they're going to live another day or not.
Yeah.
So they're going to make the best of what they got right now, live for the moment.
Right. They're just trying to desperately break that monotony of having the doom loom over them. Yeah. I thought that scene was fantastic.
That was wonderful. It really was.
I was so nervous about that. I'm like, what are... Because I read about it maybe 2 weeks before I saw the movie, and I'm like, this does not inspire me with confidence for this.
Okay, so
this film.
I was wrong about which one it was. The
Temptation of Ron.
That was creative.
I don't think that it went to that depth in the book, but they carried it to its appropriate conclusion.
Yes, I completely agree.
Because that was awesome.
And it needed to be done because the book, you had so much time that Ron is just getting picked away at.
Yep.
And it's like, you could just... When Ron gets to the point of getting pissed off and leaving,
mm-hmm.
and all of that, you're like, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
You know, you've done what has been appropriate, what has been asked of you. Mm-hmm. And if you want to step out now,
you
have earned it.
It wasn't forced. It wasn't weird. Because there are a lot of times when I'm watching a piece of media and like when the character gets to the I'm fed up point, I have a really hard time relating with that a lot of the time.
Right.
But with this one, I didn't feel that way because his arguments were reasonable. He's like, listen, I know I said I'd go with you, but this is not... This is above and beyond.
This is beyond what I signed up for.
What anybody should have reasonably expected for this. I mean, we haven't gotten anywhere, and we've been out here for months. Come on. And Harry's like, hey, you know what you signed up for. And Ron's like, don't be a dick to me, dude. I don't have a destiny.
And I still have a family.
Yeah. That was brutal.
It was brutal, but it was honest. I mean, that was like... He's right. He still has a family that is worried about him, worried about his whereabouts, and he's worried about theirs.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I you know what? Your motivations to me are unassailable, and I agree. And that does not happen often, because a lot of times I feel that things are so contrived just to happen as part of the story. But this, that felt really natural. And then the dance, same way. Like, there wasn't any weird sexual vibe mm-hmm. from it. It was like a totally non-sexual... friend, like camaraderie thing where like they were just trying to make each other laugh and giggle, and then they did, and then like there was that moment like when they were laughing and then like maybe a split second their faces shifted from being happy to like this guilt for being happy in such a shitty situation.
Yeah.
And then they were both miserable again, and it was like, man, this was a good scene.
Yeah, just a shot of survivor guilt there.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's also a little bit of, this should be Ron doing this.
Yeah.
And I'm doing this. I mean, from Hermione's position, it's mm-hmm. I should be dancing with Ron, not Harry. And from Harry's position, this should be Ron, not me. Mm-hmm. I'm crossing a line with my friend's girl.
You know, I didn't get that at all from it, though.
I got a little bit of it. Probably that same look, though, that mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I took from it. And then that's when they kind of backed away from it. It's like,
yeah, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Not like it will in a few minutes.
No. Exactly, yeah.
Man, it was good though. I was very pleased.
I thought it was a clever, creative choice to have them be kind of like the stylized CGI when they were tempting Ron.
Yeah,
with that. So you when you're looking at him, you're like, okay, yeah, this isn't really Harry and Hermione, but that's them.
yeah, exactly.
You
it's
can't
not
deny
real,
that,
but it is them.
Yeah, you can't deny that. Those are the avatars of Harry and Hermione. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's been in that situation where, like, they can envision that happening. Like, just, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't even have to be good.
Right.
It just has to be close enough that
well,
it sets
you off.
Well,
the thing is that the Horcrux is digging into his mind and amplifying his greatest anxiety and fear. And it's throwing it right up in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And see, when I read the books, I never got the feeling that it was so much that it was coming from the Horcrux as it was coming just from Ron's own psyche.
Yeah,
well,
he was projecting.
The thing is, it's but it's grabbing it and pulling it up and putting
well,
it...
Well, the movie...
And giving it vision and body outside of his mind.
Right, and and what I'm saying is, from my memory, the movie puts more emphasis on it coming from the Horcrux.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not Ron's...
It wasn't as big an event in the book as it was.
Well, it was
this.
More drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was more drawn out, and the action in the book, I think, centered more around Harry drowning.
Yeah.
Than the Horcrux being destroyed. Because I think as soon as he gets out, I think Ron just destroys the Horcrux, and then they move on with their lives.
Yeah.
But it works better this way, because now we know what Ron's greatest fear is. It's been kind of like transmitted, and all of a sudden now it's boom right in front of us, and it's pushed him to a a decision point. Is he going to give into this thing, or is he going to make the effort to conquer his demons?
Right.
And it was an appropriately spaced win for that portion of the movie, because we kind of cut out the scene in Godric's Hollow, where Harry and Hermione show up in Godric's Hollow on Christmas, right after Ron leaves. And so they walk through there. I mean, because that was a pretty bitchin' sequence there. I mean, because they go there.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, they show up in that town where the woman attacks them. Okay, so they show up in the town. It's Christmas. Mm-hmm. They're walking through. The first place they go is the graveyard.
Yeah.
And so they find Harry and Ron's, or Harry's parents buried there. Then they meet up with that woman, and they go back to her house.
Yeah, to find out the story behind it.
Oh, yeah.
Or the history.
Yeah, and history here, again, storytelling is fantastic. They show up. It's Christmas Eve. They're walking through, and, like, every building they pass, it's like, it looks like warm colors. You can hear people inside laughing, having a good time, and they're out in the cold by themselves, alone in the quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just fantastic. The whole scene where they go into, I think it's Bathilda Bagshot's house, and she's been dead.
Yeah.
And then the snake comes out. That was masterfully done. In the book, it was over a lot quicker. But I was pleased with the way that this had worked.
They paced everything out a lot better. Yep. If the first movie was so true to the books that it faulted the experience of the movie.
Yep.
This film did not do that.
It didn't
They changed things. I think they changed things necessarily for the pacing and for the storytelling of a film.
I agree and I disagree. I agree that the first book stuck too close to what was written in the first movie stuck too close to what was written in the first book, and the movie suffered for it. Mm-hmm. This movie, I think, sticks the closest to the themes of what was written in the seventh book, but not what was written.
Right.
And I think that's why it's a superior movie to all the other ones.
Because they're writing... The screenwriter wrote it for the screen,
right,
not to duplicate what was in the book. They've learned from other movies that you can't
they've learned from other of their own movies.
Well, that you can't just provide fan service.
Well,
you have to speak to the broader audience. You can't just make a movie for fans. Because if you do, you have Scott Pilgrim, which fails at the box office.
Yep.
You have to... If you want to make a big budget movie, you have to write for mainstream.
Let's be honest; they could have filmed me taking a crap for 2.5 hours. This would have been a blockbuster.
You call it Harry Potter. Yeah,
that's right. Harry Potter and the squelching demon.
Well, one thing I'll amplify on that first part there: when they did the first movie through the first book, if they hadn't followed it up because they were dealing with basically a younger audience. At the time, if they hadn't followed the book almost exactly, all their fans would have just beat the crap out of them.
They had to do that with the first one.
They had to establish a name.
It hurt the film as a film, and it's going to make.
But the fans, the
nostalgia for the film, it's going to make nostalgia for the film bite people in the ass when they come back and watch it. You know, when they saw the movie as a 12-year-old, mm-hmm. and then go back and watch it as a
20-year-old.
Well, they could do that now. I mean, that's just it. They could go back and watch it as a 20-year-old now. But when they watch it with their kids when they're 7 or 8 years old, when they're in their 30s, that's going to be rough because they're gonna have different memories of what that movie was.
Right. That first film was aimed at a younger audience.
Absolutely.
And this one is aimed at a somewhat older audience.
Okay. So one thing that we kind of glazed over that I did want to mention... the positioning of each of the characters during the shots while they're camping leading up to when Ron leaves is hot. If you look at the way that the scenes are shot, it's almost always Ron and Hermione in the foreground and then Ron between them in the background. Mm-hmm. Like, almost literally he's coming between them. It's... Wait.
Harry
in the background and then Ron and Hermione in the foreground.
Right.
It is hot. It is hot, man. I was like, God damn, that's hot. Okay, so Ron comes back. They had their reunion scene. The reunion scene was fine. I was good with that.
Yeah.
It all felt pretty natural.
I like how she was still pissed at him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's appropriate. Yeah. She should be. Yeah. She should not welcome him with open arms. She because should still be annoyed.
Because he was being kind of a dick.
He was.
This is when they go to Luna Lovegood's house.
Yes.
I don't remember why they went there. Maybe they were looking. Were they looking for her dad? I thought they were looking for her.
Symbol.
I know it was the symbol.
It was the symbol because her dad was wearing the symbol on, and they wanted to go ask.
And all the symbols kept appearing in all the documents they were reading, and the book she had, and whatnot. And they just why was this symbol appearing all over the place?
And they wanted a frame of reference since he was wearing the symbol. If you wear the symbol, you probably know what it means.
Right.
So that's what. So that's they show they up,
and he's being all skeezy and creepy. And then he tells them the story of the Deathly Hallows. What did you think of this vignette? This is when it cuts the animation.
That was cool.
Like the really sharp points in animation.
Cool.
It was a cool way to talk about, because these are some pretty dark topics, like death.
You know what I loved about it?
These three brothers who tricked death.
Yeah, it felt like a grim fairy tale.
Yeah.
The way they told it, it sounds like. You can see how somebody would have glossed over this fairy tale in a telling to their child, but that when you go back to the true fairy tale, it's much darker, and yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
The only thing that I didn't like about the sequence was just how obviously weird Luna's dad was being about everything. It was like, this is kind of interesting that you guys are here.
Which is 50%.
It was to the point where they should have figured out something was going on, just how weird he was being.
The only saving grace there.
All the time, so he's not breaking character.
The saving grace there is that Luna is friggin' weird.
Well, that's true. that's true.
Like that's the only thing. I was like, that whole family is bizarre. So I can see overlooking that.
That said, yeah.
I would probably question it, but... I've read the book, so I already know what's going to happen next. Right. So,
I think Luna's a great character.
Luna's awesome.
I love Luna.
I love Luna.
I think she's great. She's a freak.
Yeah.
But she knows she is. The brilliance of the character, she knows how weird she is, and she doesn't care. She is who she is. She makes no apologies
about
it. I
wish that chick was legal. That's how we get around pedophilia charges, right there. So they escape this, and they run right into a patch, a group of snatchers. Hermione hits Harry in the face with a face-altering, swelling charm, so they don't recognize him. They kind of think it's him, so they bring him to the Malfoy estate.
That was good.
From this sequence on, the movie is, as far as I'm concerned, the movie is the best that it gets.
Yes.
This sequence here on... they roll into the Malfoy estate. They've been dewanded. They've been imprisoned. They show up. Everyone is trying to determine whether or not this is Harry or not.
Great job of building suspense at this point.
Yep.
I mean, that whole sequence of, wow, they don't have wands. Wow, whoa, they're in prison.
Yep.
Yeah, Hermione's alone up there with...
Yes.
The psycho.
So
that was one of those things that was like, I don't... Because I get to the point where it's like, I don't remember what happens now.
I remember what happened.
None of the primaries die here. So it was like, I don't remember what happens, but I don't remember how they get out of this either. So at this point, I'm like fully invested in this because it was really well done.
So they go through the torture, and like you can hear Hermione screaming from upstairs. Perfect.
Yeah.
I love scenes where people are getting tortured and people have to deal with that. They trick down Wormtail. They knock him out, and they escape upstairs with the help of Dobby. Yada yada yada. So they get up there, and this is I think one of the best scenes in the movie, where Hermione is laying sprawled out on the floor, mm-hmm. and Helena Bonham Carter is on top of her, scribbling mud blood into her arm. That is not something that is in the book. That is something that Emma Watson and Helena Bonham Carter came up with together.
Really?
And people on the set were creeped out.
That's awesome.
By how torturous it was.
Because that's fantastic.
That scene really works because now we really get an idea of just how freaking crazy They are.
Yes. Well, we kind of had an idea how crazy Bellatrix Lestrange was, but
it's always been, they've always danced around the edge. She's not only crazy, she's fully invested with Voldemort and his crazy racial purity ideas.
Well, and normally you get the sense that she's crazy because she's willing to kill anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is
full-on torture.
This is torture.
And I mean, they have redacted some stuff from the movies. Like, she's the one who tortures Neville Longbottom's parents into insanity.
Right.
So, I mean, they don't obviously go into that. Kind of wish they would, because later Neville Longbottom will kick some goddamn ass, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But, I don't know. His parents are still alive, so Mrs. Malfoy kind of gets the honors. There's a whole standoff here, and during the Great Escape, Dobby takes a dagger to the chest, which I was leading up to this sequence. When they apparated back in their camp, and the Snatchers weren't quite there yet,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, we're going to cut it off right before Dobby dies. Then the Snatcher showed up, I was like, boom! Yes! Dobby death. So we're going to end on a high note. Because God damn, I hate Dobby. That is the most worthless character in the books.
They've proved that through the movies by completely marginalizing.
Yeah, completely omitting. Yeah.
I think that's the one, a little bit of a problem I had with the movie,
mm-hmm.
compared to the book, is in the books, Dobby's character and story go through the 4th, 5th, 6th books. The whole
elves
and the
house elves, the
house
servitude,
elves,
the slavery,
and all that
liberation
stuff.
Movement.
And they touch on it just a little bit in this movie, but I have almost no feeling for the character anymore.
Yeah, I don't care
because the character's been so marginalized at this point. It's like, hey, this character that is almost meaningless at this point just shows up out of the blue.
Yep.
Wow.
He's got clothes on.
Heroic death, aren't you?
Great.
I mean, it almost felt... they had to do it because they had to end that story. They had to end that character, and that sequence had to happen that way.
Well,
but
this whole book is about... The recurring theme in this book is the price of victory.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got this prophecy, and they're going to fulfill the prophecy. And it's going to... The hero's going to win, but what is it going to cost him? And it costs him a hell of a lot of people. And if they had omitted any of the... If they omit any of the deaths, that'll be a crime.
Yes.
Because the point is that this great victory
especially,
is kind of foundation on all these bodies.
Especially what happens next.
Yeah.
In the next movie.
The next movie is really going to clinch whether or not they pushed out. Which they won't.
They shouldn't.
This movie clinches
it. I think they've proved that it would be hard for them to step back and not do some of the things that should happen in the next movie.
Well, we don't have to worry about this too much because this movie was filmed in one continuous go.
Well,
it's already sitting in the pan.
Yeah, right. there's one big death coming up that has a huge consequence, and
there's a couple. Not with the emotional impact.
No, there's one that
the one big two
that should strike at the gut. I'm not remembering one of them.
The big one. The end of the debate.
Oh.
Snape, come on.
There was no debate. Seriously, if you paid attention, there is no debate.
First off, the Prince's Tale is the best chapter out of all 7 of those books. That backstory chapter is fantastic.
No disagreement.
Even like the 5 paragraphs leading up to it where like he's dying and filling the vial with his memories and like giving Harry the death stare. That's an awesome scene.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait for that to happen because you know what? Alan Rickman has been the best thing about this series.
They cast him so well right from the beginning.
Oh my God,
man.
He's so good.
You had to nail that. You had to get somebody that was going to be that creepy, that smart,
mm-hmm.
that creepy, and that believable
yep.
for every aspect of the character of Snape.
In Half-Blood Prince, the scene like right after he kills Dumbledore
mm-hmm.
and he's walking out of the castle. The guy who plays Malfoy is walking behind him, and he's like, I kept stepping on his cape, and I thought he was going to turn around and kill me. At one point, he says, don't do that again. I almost crapped my pants. I was like, yes, that is what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Because that is the perfect Snape bullshit, man. God damn. I am ready to bang something. I am so jazzed. Holy crap.
Yeah, the biggest shame is that we have to wait till July.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was earlier. I thought it was like April.
No.
It's like son of a bitch. You make me wait six months. That's bullshit.
So, well, it's got to finish its theatrical run, and they got to get the DVD out.
Tony, come on.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll buy a house next year.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Be your housewarming party.
So, let's go ahead and finish this up. That's pretty much the end. They buried Dobby. Mm-hmm. I was unmoved by Dobby's death.
Yeah, I said before, the character was so marginalized. It was like, it was unfortunate that the character died.
Right there.
Yeah. It was unfortunate that the character died, but he had a great ending. He went out in style. And he went out heroic.
That's another thing that I'm worried about that they're going to do. They're going to give everybody a heroic death. I don't want everybody to have a heroic death. Because it did it with Hedwig. Although Hedwig's death was kind of brutal. It was worse because Hedwig came back.
Yeah.
Which I was fine with. Because really, that's the kind of the point.
Yeah, Hedwig is his...
It's my dog, familiar.
It's his familiar. I mean, it's supposed to be there for him.
Yeah. Yeah, boom. That also happened at the end.
Yeah.
Voldemort figured out that Dumbledore had the wand.
Yeah.
And so while they're burying Dobby, Voldemort goes and digs up Dumbledore.
That was good.
That was good.
That was really good when he pulls out the wand.
Yeah. He shoots lightning into the sky. And I was like, that was kind of unnecessary, but okay.
Showboat.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this is why the movie has to diverge from the books, because in the books, we get all of that exposition through Harry, because he sees it in his mind's eye.
Yeah.
Or whatever queerness she comes up with. In the movies, they have to flip perspective.
They've been doing that nice and subtly.
Yeah.
They haven't overdone that, which I'm kind of glad for, because it could have gotten really forced. All his little dream sequences.
That would have been terrible.
They go into Voldemort. Because in the book, even in the book, it was like, oh, are we going to have another one of these? Really?
Mm-hmm.
They almost got to the point of being tedious. I never felt that with
I think
the
they
movie.
Work pretty good, because that's how I envisioned it would do. You just all of a sudden start seeing through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah.
And you're seeing all the terrible things you're doing, and it's got to affect you, too, because you can't stop watching it.
Yep. Yeah, okay, Mad-Eye didn't get a heroic death, but Mad-Eye doesn't even die on screen in the book.
Mm-hmm. It's a mention. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he just doesn't show up at the end.
He just didn't make it.
Whoops. Okay. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think that his death serves a larger purpose than to be heroic. It isn't the cost of victory for Mad-Eye. It is the price of solitude for Harry.
Success.
No, Harry's alone. I mean, even the greatest Auror in the world, which everybody says Mad-Eye is gone.
Yeah.
He's been killed. Dumbledore's been killed. You are goddamn alone. There is nobody left for you.
Well, also, we kind of symbolize the shedding of all his parents. He's got no more mentors. He's got no more protectors. He has to now fight on his own. I mean, we've been amping you up all these years. It's time to pay the price.
Yeah, which is a shame that none of the Weasley parents die.
They were the stability. The Weasley father was supposed to die. Rowling wrote it that the Weasley dad was going to die. Then she backed out.
She couldn't do it.
She said, Harry has lost too many father figures. I can't take this one away from him also.
Right. He's got to... He's
he not. Lost his dad. He lost Sirius. He lost Mad-Eye. Dumbledore. He lost Dumbledore.
He loses Lupin.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one after another.
Goddamn, George's death is going to be brutal, man. That is going to be rough. Like, you got a little bit of a taste of it when Fred was laying on that couch.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is going to be a rough movie.
I love, though, how Fred gets up and, like, starts messing with him.
Yes!
Sticking the thing out of his ear.
Yes.
I started busting at laughing. She was like, what is stuck in his ear?
I tried to tell Melita. I'm like, I think this scene right here explains that scene where he's on the couch and he wakes up and the first thing he does is he makes a joke. I'm like, that is my entire philosophy on life right there. That everything, no matter what happens, is always less important than the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Always. When I aspirated when they put me under, first thing I did when I woke up, made a joke. Half conscious, and I was like, boom! That's how you do it, boys. That's how it's done.
That is the reason those characters exist.
Yes.
And without it,
ooh man,
those aren't the same characters. You're just yep. you're forcing a situation. To have him get up and start joking and making everybody else more comfortable yep. by his joking, that's his role. That's his,
and that's why his death character is so brutal.
Yeah.
Because when George dies, Fred can't handle it.
Yeah.
That's oh man, we'll watch the movie now, Daryl. What the fuck? Come on! Boom! I'm with Sir Guido. When I hit George's death, I had to put the book down and walk away for a minute. I am with that guy
yeah.
right there. Man,
his death was kind of like in Serenity. It was Wash's death. It was like
First off, I hated Wash.
It's the character that you don't expect to die, though.
Yeah.
It's the Joker, the funny one, the one that is supposed to
make a joke
and make it all better.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that character taken from you, to have the one that's supposed to come up behind you at the funeral and make you laugh in a bad situation, to have that character taken away, that just makes everything harder.
Right there.
But that just makes it a little more true to life. It's, you know, bad things happen to good people. It's not always the bad who get killed, it's sometimes always the good.
Yeah, I know, but the poignant statement there is that...
more tragic.
The poignant statement there that is that the death isn't tragic. It's the people who survive right. that's the tragedy.
Yeah.
And there is no worse survivor than an identical twin who can't deal with it.
Yeah.
God damn, then when Mrs. Weasley goes apeshit, I just about crapped my pants when I was reading the book.
It's
very rarely do I crap my pants when reading books. It was like a full-on book shitting.
Yeah, it's going to be I hope it's going to be epic. I mean, it'll be tragic if they don't.
Well, it can bring us to kind of another point here. When all these movies are finally out,
they're never going to end.
Well, no, they're going to end at some point. Is it going to be this could kind of like be Lord of the Rings, where you have to almost watch it from beginning to end.
And I will do so.
Director's cuts. I know it takes a lifetime.
Yeah, maybe.
It only takes 24 hours.
And in one continuous push, rather than have three to four years between movies to get the whole picture.
And see, I don't even think that's the case, because there's some of the story that had to be marginalized mm-hmm. for the sake of telling it in a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
Versus still, a 700-page book.
When you
book.
Can sit back and watch the movies back to back to back without a 3 to 4 year delay between
and them. And I will.
It makes you can then see the sweep of it and you get the whole story at one time.
I will. Just granted, to see Hermione get closer and closer to legal.
Hermione's been legal for 2 years.
Hermione, I don't think, ever becomes legal.
Oh, I'm just talking about the actress.
Emma Watson's been legal for 2 years.
Now the big question is what happens to all these actors after their career is over?
I see Emma Watson releasing a sex tape in the next 5 years. I'm okay with this. In fact, I want to start EmmaWatsonSexTape.com.
I would like to see Ron in about, give him a couple of years off, and then have him show up as a sidekick in a James Bond movie.
Mm.
Ooh.
I
would watch it.
Spitballing.
I don't think Emma Watson's going to have any problems.
I don't think so.
No, she won't.
And what's his name? Harry.
That guy can do whatever he wants.
He's been doing it.
He doesn't need to work anymore.
Well,
he's already doing whatever he wants.
There's that.
Because he's getting naked on stage. Come on. You just don't. Like, there's nowhere go. There's nowhere up to go from that. I get naked on stage and people come see me.
I win.
Yeah.
I won at life. I was Harry Potter and I get naked on stage. What have you got?
Emma Watson and Alohomora. Oh, man. I got to write that down. I'm going to use tomorrow. I'm going to use that tomorrow at work, and then say it was mine. I got nothing else here.
Okay, I think we just about wrapped it up with this movie.
Booyah!
The only problem is we got to have the discussion 6 months from now.
That's not a problem. That's a blessing in disguise. Guys,
we put it on the schedule. It'll be on the calendar now that we have a calendar.
Here's the idea. We release this as a two-episode set. A and B.
No, we'll actually be caught up by then.
Yeah, we're going to be caught up. We should be caught up in...
Well, it'll be the special director's cut edition.
No, it's going to be April.
Well, it would be the special director's cut edition edited together.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's it. See you guys next time.
Thank you.
Jeffrey.